Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, RickAckerman.com. He's speaking to us from South Florida. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Hey, thanks for inviting me on, Jim. It is always a pleasure.
Rick, there's been so much red on my Bloomberg screen over the past week. I feel like I should spray some Visine on it. Is this bleeding on the stock markets going to end, or is this the end of the little purge?
Oh, isn't it refreshing? Market's finally getting its comeuppance, the correction it's needed for a decade, really, to set things right. And I think it's got a lot lower to go. In fact, I'm not even going to give you some numbers there with respect to the Dow and the E-mini S&Ps, because anybody who plays this interview is going to mistake me for a lunatic. But I think we've only, I think the bear market is in its infancy. But that said, I'd be very wary of thinking you can cash in just by getting short, because we're going to get a short squeeze rally at one point, and its purpose will be to make guys like me look ridiculous and to even make me think, hey, we're going to new all-time highs. So you got to watch out for that.
Well, when this whole thing started, we had so many people, including yourself, saying in November, you know, I think we've hit the peak. We're going to start to see some corrections here, and it could be pretty deep. And I wondered at the time, is this going to be the trickiest of all market declines, where it goes down for 2 days, goes up for one, goes down for 1 day, up for one? But you gradually notice that for every 3% gain, there's a 0.25% down for the week. And it's just going to keep stepping down for a year or two. Is that what you see? They'll fool us with little rallies, and then it'll just not come back just enough.
Well, the intraday will be sort of pockmarked by little blip-blitz rallies. It's hard to short. I mean, it's hard to short. Usually the strategy we use that I advise my subscribers to use is to short the intraday stuff and take a small profit and leave a couple of contracts if we're trading futures to swing for the fences. But there's really no such thing as a short and hold. You can't do it, because if you're short, the upswings before you go down to a new low will always do more damage than the incremental gain you'll make holding from one low to the next. So, you know, from a risk reward standpoint, you really can't do a sell short and hold. It has to be traded. Otherwise you're going to be, winding up. Well, you're not going to make money, and you may get wiped out. Let me give you a number on a Dow where we're going to get a bounce, and this is going to be very precise because it comes from a pattern that looks very promising to me. Hang on, if I can get, I can cajole TradeStation into letting me put this thing on the correct bar. All right, so give you an exact number on the Dow. I think we're going to get a good rip-roaring rally there from 31,075. So that's about 500 points below where we are now, 475 points or so. So at that point, the Dow will be down about 750 points. That's where I think we'll get a rally today. But it will be a bear rally.
So when you're in a situation like that, what about the FANGs? They were the darlings of the stock market for the longest time. Have they had their teeth pulled?
Well, they've really gotten whopped here, and, you know, we've talked about Apple. I consider Apple It's the only stock you really have to watch to get the stock market right and the bull market or the bear market right. It's a perfect proxy for institutional mindset. And they've, all the chimpanzees who throw your hard-earned money at the market have had kind of a no-brainer with Apple. They've all bought it, stayed long, and they've effortlessly made money with it. Virtually every fund manager on the planet owns Apple. So if you watch Apple, there's no way you can miss. That's not to say it's not tricky. You know, I had, a target coming in, I've had for a long time a target, with Apple down around 146.77. And there was a time yesterday when it traded just 6 cents below that and had a really powerful rally. But today it broke loose and, I've sort of gone away from my own system because it seems obvious to me that Apple wants to test some lows that were made last October down around 138. So that's just below, and we're going to have a bounce from there too, and it could be a good one, but I think eventually we'll come down beneath that low, and as Apple slips lower and lower, you're going to see the whole institutional world kind of agonizing over it. But again, that's where I keep my focus.
Now, we had an interesting discussion before we went to air about the future of certain things and where people might want to put money. And of course, they make fun of people who are into Bitcoin or into blockchain. But there are developments there that seem to be encouraging, and we don't want to discourage people to explore new technology, because that may be the only thing that saves us little bugs who crawl around on this piece of dust hurtling through the universe. Blockchain development, what's going on there?
Well, we were talking about, this is out in an interesting way in an article in Wired magazine. Their online newsletters are pretty good. They're, you know, you get updates each day. And there's a good story today about attempts to create Web3. Which would, at least, it's hoped that it will, live up to the promise of Internet One. And the idea of it is to use, essentially blockchain technology to create an Internet that somehow locks out the big guys, because we've seen with Internet 2.0, the idealism of the original, Internet that goes back to Mosaic browser and all that. It was compromised by the virtual takeover by big companies. There's such there's complete dominance of the internet by a relative handful of companies: Google, Amazon in retail, Facebook, and most of them are just big advertising agencies. So that is really colored the way it's not colored. It's actually determinant of how the internet works. And how, when we're online, we're really the target of all these companies that want to deliver their message. And the internet gives the intermediaries there, the Googles and the Facebooks, a huge opportunity to make money and exploit, and compromise our right to privacy. So, Web3 is just, I don't know. I haven't read the article yet. It just came this morning. But it suggests a method of encryption that keeps the discussion, I guess, more atomized. There's less centralization of the of distribution. So we'll have more private conversations, and there'll be more sequestering of groups, interest groups, and whatever. So I guess you can be hopeful of that, about that, or maybe not. But I think it has a corresponding, there's a connection, I think, to what Elon Musk has planned for Twitter.
Yes, and it's interesting. You said also before we went on air that Elon Musk maybe is one of the few people you trust because he doesn't seem to be trying to rip you off in some way.
Yeah, we were, I was telling you about I've got a Sennheiser headset and a Vonage desk phone, and the two of them, between the two of them, I get an interruption in my conversation exactly every 10 minutes. And I know exactly where the problem is, and Sennheiser knows where it is too. But they said, well, but you know, our headset is just incompatible with your Vonage phone. And I insisted that it's not a question of compatibility. It's a question of whether you want to fork out a couple of bucks to fix the glitch. We know exactly where it is. So what's happened, I think that the digital age is giving us such complexity that even the simplest things are no longer fixable. And, you don't trust any of these companies when they tell you, in this case, they sent out a new headset and base. And they said that'll fix it. And I'm thinking, no, it won't, but I let them send it anyway. And, so you can't trust anybody, except a zillionaire, really. So that's why I think Musk is trustable. And he seems to have a streak of populism in him. There are other billionaires that we don't particularly like. Larry Ellison does not have a reputation as Mr. Good Guy, but Branson and Elon Musk, they're the ones who seem to be having fun with their money, and I think those are the guys you can trust.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, we haven't heard any reports of employees for Elon Musk or Richard Branson at Virgin making employees work such impossible shifts that they have to carry bottles around to pee in.
Right. We did hear those stories with the Amazon warehouse workers. And I don't know. I tend to give Bezos the benefit of the doubt. He's only sort of retailing to the whole world and by anybody's judgment doing a pretty good job. You know, he did a good job killing independent retail in his country, but there's a little bit of forethought there even to ameliorating the problem, because a lot of the retailers, the independents, have managed to stay alive by essentially connecting up to Amazon. So yeah, I think we haven't, if there were stories about Musk being cruel or discriminating against warehouse workers, we would hear about it.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, this household uses Amazon all the time. I'm amazed at how quickly you can order something online and it's at your doorstep. Sometimes within hours. It's incredible. So it's an incredibly efficient organization. It's just, again, I know Jeff, if he could, would replace every human with a robot.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes, he would. He would. With fuel prices going up the way they are, though, yeah, you got to wonder how long free Amazon Prime deliveries are going to continue. I don't see how it's possible.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, crude oil surprised for the longest time where it didn't go down when it usually does, and I guess we can blame the war between Russia and Ukraine for that. But we haven't seen any tankers torpedoed or blowed up or blowing up, I guess is the proper term. I'm sorry, I had a little SCTV flashback there. He blowed up real good.
I remember that. Yeah, we're going to blow it up real good.
He blowed up real good. May the Lord take a liking to him. But so are these high oil prices justified when there haven't really been the massive disruptions to the system that many feared might happen?
Justified. Well, that's an interesting word. Yeah. You know, it's a sad state of affairs that we only have one newspaper in the country that would even investigate that matter of justification. That's the Houston Chronicle. The Houston Chronicle is the only paper in the world that really covers the energy sector well, at least in the English language. And you know, as you're just talking about crude, I got taken to task this morning in my own chat room by a guy who said, you know, you really blew it with crude, because yes, I was looking for a shot up to 140, currently trading around 107. And the high that we had back in March was, let's see what it was. It was 121. Okay. So we had a good pullback down to 90-something, and I saw another surge up to 140. And this guy's saying, hey, Rick, you know, you blew it, and you cost me money because you discouraged me from getting short in crude. And what kind of deflationist are you? But I'm a deflationist who's been very realistic in kind of believing my charts, even though I think the end game will be a deflationary catastrophe for us all. I haven't, the asset inflation has not been lost to me. So as I look at the chart though of crude, I'm thinking, well, I'm not really giving up on 140 yet. We've had this giant rally from around 65 up to 121 that took place starting this year, up to that top I mentioned at 121. And now we're wedging. We're going to have to break out of this wedge, and it looks like a consolidation to me. Or at least I think we're going to get a high that exceeds the, let's see what the date was, back in March 24th, we had a high of 113 and change. And I think we're going to push above that, meaning we've got a $7, $8 rally in crude, which means no relief at the pumps. And so as far as the big rally to 140, you just mentioned that nobody has taken out a tanker with a Stinger missile or some surface to surface or whatever, but that would just do the trick, I think. And I don't want to give anybody ideas, but just from a purely technical standpoint, the crude chart doesn't look too bearish here. And again, that's very bad news for those of us who fill up at the pump, meaning everybody.
Yes. And, it seems to me now 2, maybe 3 years in a row now, we haven't had our usual springtime maintenance fire slash explosion at a refinery, so they would have an excuse to boost the price because they already have the excuse built in.
Right. It's like, who needs that hoax with the spring season, with the refinery fire or the maintenance operation or whatever, when they got so many other factors working in favor of suppressing supply, even if that's the case. I don't know. But well, we're kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. And, you know, with respect to inflation, we've seen so much inflation in everything so far, but there's such a clear read right now on much more of the same because, you know, as these, certainly diesel prices in particular, as they work their way higher, you got to factor that into the shipping cost, the trucking cost of pretty much everything. So it's almost hard to imagine, but I'm thinking, geez, as far as inflation so far, we ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah, and at the grocery store, again, I don't know where governments get their inflation numbers because they certainly don't match up with the grocery bills. We were just comparing our grocery bills from last year at the same time for similar items. I paid $3 for a bunch of grapes last year. They're now nearly $12. That's more than 8% inflation, buddy.
we're all like getting crushed by it. I mean, everybody sees it in their lives, and just to clarify, though, you know, I identify myself as a deflationist, but it's not really what I see now is let's a part of the end game. We're having an inflation blow off, but my deflation scenario, the end game, says that eventually the excesses of debt are going to crush inflation, and that the deflationary implosion will come when like 10, 15 zeros from the world's balance sheet get lopped off because of bankruptcies and failures. When a bank goes under, or when a bond issuer fails, then whatever, however much money, whether it was the $30 billion or $10 billion or whatever, it's wiped off the books. So that's all deflationary. So the deflation that's coming will arise from a much, much, much bigger force than the inflation that's driving consumer goods right now. So just not so that people don't say, oh, what this guy talking about, deflation? There's no I don't think there's an outcome possible other than deflation once this inflationary spiral has run its course and choked off the economies. And we are in recession right now, and that will still have to factor into the inflationary trend.
Mm-hmm. Now, people will say it's impossible for us to be in a recession. Employment's at record highs in a lot of areas, but again, that's officially recorded unemployment. Once your employment insurance runs out, you're no longer officially unemployed.
Right.
Yeah.
Nobody believes any statistics anymore. You just have to sort of get your information and your impressions anecdotally. And anecdotally, I guess a lot of my friends are doing well with the asset inflation. Their homes have gone up wildly in value. Of course, they can't sell them and cash out because they'd have to figure out where else they could live. So it's kind of a useless inflation. You can still borrow against it, but at higher rates. And there's where the problem is. You know, rates are going up. In a real sense, they're not. You know, the consumer inflation is outstripping the rise in rates. So, but eventually, we'll be in a situation similar to what we saw in 2007 and 8, when rates weren't really rising, but because the collateral, meaning home, residential, real estate, whatever, was falling, the real rate of interest was going up. The real burden of interest of debt was going up. So anyway, I think we're very close to a top in interest rates. I had a 3.24% target out on the 10-year, and we got as high as, I think, 3.16. So we're almost there, and I think those rates are high enough right to choke off whatever little last gasp of life exists in the economy.
Yeah. Now, back in the late 70s, early 80s, when we had rampant inflation, Canada savings bonds, I remember 1981, because I bought them, paid 21%. And I guess that eventually led to the end of inflation and brought it down to something reasonable. But in the meantime, would we have to bring interest rates back up to 18% to quell this inflation? You're saying if you get near 4%, that should be enough.
Yeah, I think it will be. You know, that we're not living in a Volcker era of wage price spiral. You know, we've got a very different kind of inflation that's fed by funny money flowing into assets, mainly real estate and of course stocks and some other things. But keep in mind that those zeros that constitute inflation of the dollar supply are vanishing. And it's not a zero-sum game. If Apple, let's say, the biggest cap stock in the world, recently worth whatever it was, however many trillions of dollars, but if it ends the day, let's say, at 141, and the next day there's some horrible news and the State Street and Vanguard and BlackRock, they all decide they want to sell Apple, the stock will be down at $4 in a hurry. But when it gaps down, no money has changed hands. It's just that the zeros, the hundreds of billions of dollars of valuation have vanished from the earth. There's no longer a way to borrow against Apple. The collateral value has decreased, and the capitalization has decreased. And it's not like the decrease is going into someone else's pocket. It has simply vanished. So that's another way in which the deflation will play out.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, indeed a pleasure, Jim. I always enjoy our conversations.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.